This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is South Dakota Representative Dusty Johnson. He's a member of the House Ag Committee, joins us in just a moment. First off, Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone, on this whole idea that it's maybe more than just a fad.
I knew that if I could convince people in the cattle producing business, in agriculture, to watch it and watch an entertaining version of real issues they're dealing with, that I could get everybody to watch it. And I was speaking at this deal in December, and I said, look, there's a boot barn on Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood, and I put it there. So now I got them thinking it's cool. Okay, great. So now let's explain to them, hey, here's where your food comes from. You got questions about the cattle industry, ask away.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by the Honorable Dusty Johnson, representing the entire state of South Dakota.
The whole thing.
The whole thing. All of it. He's here. Dusty, great to see you.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Member of the House Ag Committee and also, Transportation and infrastructure, is that part of the duty as well?
It is, and I'm on the Select Committee on China, which has an increasingly large amount to do with American agriculture.
Let's start there for just a moment with China, because we've gone from this trade war that we had to having a Phase 1 agreement to a point now where what do we have?
China is a legitimate long-term threat to our country. I mean, they have been trying to knock us down for about 20 years, and we've been sleepwalking through it. That being said, we really need a fair amount of leadership and nuance. We just cannot allow the voices that are least reasonable to guide the day. And here's what I mean by that. I mean, 60% of South Dakota soybeans are sold overseas. The overwhelming majority of them go to China. And so it's fine to say, oh, the Chinese are our enemy, we're not dealing with them anymore. And there are clearly ways in which we should be willing to strategically decouple from the Chinese Communist Party. But we also need to be honest with the fact that there are types of trade that can benefit the Chinese people and Americans. We need to be smart enough to be able to tell what's good trade and what's trade that's more problematic.
So does World Trade Organization come up in this conversation as well? Because that's really what we've tried to use is a rules-based system.
Yes, and I'm a believer in the rules-based system. You know, when the United States challenges China in the WTO, we have never lost. China has a terrible track record in front of the WTO because they don't do a very good job following the rules. And so if we are willing to push the envelope a little bit, we know that we can have findings from the WTO that China's not playing straight, they're not doing right. That's going to give us more leverage. And again, I don't have a problem if China's buying our soybeans and if we're buying cheap T-shirts from them. But I do think it's a big problem if there are critically important minerals or supplies or medical equipment that we can only get from one country in the world. We need to be willing to diversify our supply chains a little bit.
Okay, so I've come across something known as the SAVE Act. Does that kind of work into this conversation as well?
Well, this is really more about making sure that Europe plays it straight. Europe just loves to label things, and then they act like they own the label. The most famous one, most people understand that champagne, in America we got to call it sparkling wine. If it doesn't come from the Champagne region of France, that word is off limits to the rest of us. And they just create more of these all the time. I mean, oh, you can't call this cheese that. You can't call this meat that. And the reality is that this is just protectionism. This is just Europe trying to protect their goods at the expense. They don't want to be able to open up their markets. They don't want other markets to be able to be opened up to American products, which in many cases are better than the European products anyway. My bill, the SAVE Act, which we're hoping to get included in the Farm Bill, would just make it clear that there are going to be a list of things. I mean, Europe does not get to decide what America calls our food products, and that we are going to instruct the USTR, the U.S. Trade Representative, to go make sure that we negotiate better deals with Europe with regard to these place names.
Okay, so you said try to make that part of the Farm Bill. That is a top topic as well. Can we get a Farm Bill, and what are you watching there?
But we are going to get a Farm Bill. You know, it has been Frankly, there have been a lot of other things going on in Washington, D.C., so we are, I think, getting to a point now where we're beginning to build up some momentum behind a farm bill. We had a hearing today. I'm chairman of the subcommittee that oversees rural development, among other things. We had a great hearing today with some real specific examples about what we need to do in that rural development title to better invest in rural communities. And so we're getting the kind of specific feedback from broader America that I think is going to help us bring this farm bill into focus. But we don't have a lot of time. We do need, I think, to shift into a higher gear and be prepared to get this thing done in the next few months.
Okay, getting things done. Final one here for you, supply chains. Have we recovered from the mess that we had during the pandemic? Have we learned lessons for sure?
We did learn lessons, and Congress also, I mean, I know we have a tendency to think of Congress as just people who can't shoot straight, but there were some things we've done with the supply chain that made a big difference. I was the author, along with John Garamendi of California, of the Ocean Shipping Reform Act. It really is holding these ocean carriers, foreign flagged ocean carriers, accountable for how they have not been giving American agricultural exports a fair shake. I had the chairman of the Federal Maritime Commission in my office today talking about what a big impact my bill has had on helping that supply chain heal. We're not exactly where we need to be. We've got some work to go yet, but man, we have made a lot of progress.
And you've got the West Coast port issue that's mm-hmm. not really related to that, but it is in a roundabout way. There are still issues out there, right?
For sure, yeah. Long Beach and the Port of L.A., there have been a lot of improvements to those ports. More are coming. But it is, I mean, my bill did address the fact that you had these foreign flagged ocean carriers who were bringing in iPhones and other high value products from Asia. They would unload, they would have American agricultural products on the dock, and they would not put them into the ship. Instead, they would turn around and they'd hurry back to Asia so they could turn around on more iPhones because they could make more money that way. Well, listen, I love the free market as much as anybody, but I got to tell you, when you're using American ports, when you are using the American marketplace to be able to have a market for the off-takers of these Asian goods, you do have an obligation of reciprocity to be willing to take American corn, beans, dairy, protein, and get it back to Asia where there were willing buyers. And my bill made it clear to those guys they got to play fair. It moved us in the right direction in a big way.
It's always good to see you. Will you come back and see us?
Oh, absolutely.
Again, it's the Honorable Dusty Johnson representing South Dakota, member of the House Ag Committee, on the Agribusiness Report.
Where is the beef industry heading? Find out firsthand October 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Gaylord Texan Resort in Grapevine. It's Texas Cattle Feeders Association's annual convention featuring John Foley, a former Blue Angels pilot, and mentalist and illusionist Wayne Hoffman. The 2023 TCFA Annual Convention in Grapevine. Learn more online, tcfa.org.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Taylor Sheridan is co-creator of the TV series Yellowstone.
And there's three divisions, for those who don't know. One is in Guthrie. One is about 3 hours away in north of Amarillo. It's called Dixon Creek. And then there's a third division about an hour from there, a little less, called Frisco Creek, which is a backgrounding yard. We all knew that what was most likely going to happen is that this ranch was going to be broken up. And that would be the end of it. And I called the head of the studio, actually, and said, look, I'm driving out to the Sixes right now to go film the story of a real ranch. And by the time it airs, this ranch will not exist. And I called my wife and I said, look, I don't know what to do because the ranch I'm going to go film, they're about to break up. Then I get a phone call from a realtor who says, hey, we've been speaking with the with the seller's realtor, and it's Miss Marion's hopes that she can find someone that will continue her vision, and she'd like to try and do that prior to taking it out on the market. And we all think that that person is you. And I said, how much is the ranch? And they said, it's $350 million. And I said, well, I'm about 330 short. So I'm going to need a minute. Give me a few days. Don't do anything. Give me a few days. So I called my wife and I said, look, there's want to's in this life and there's have to's. And I think I have to do this because I'm afraid if I don't, it won't exist. It's lasted 152 years, 150 years at that point. And if I don't do this, it will not exist. And I think that I can get it to go another 150. But it's going to change. My plan was to retire. I'd already bought Bosque Ranch. My plan was to retire and just run these movie horses and show horses, and I was good. I said, it's going to change that. I'm going to have to go to the network and make a big overall deal with them and write a whole bunch of TV shows for them in order to pull this off. So I need to know you're on board because it changes the plan. And then I had a conversation with my son, who's now 12. He was 10 at the time. And I said, look, this changes the plan for you too, because if I'm real lucky, I got 35 years in. And then what? So you've got to want to do this too. You've got to, this changes what you do for a living, because whether you like it or not, you're a rancher. And he cried and said, okay, I'll do it. I said, all right. So I went and made the overall deal. I reached out to some investors to get some minority investors as much to help me offset the cost as bring in some really fresh ideas. So I brought in investors that have experience in oil and gas. I brought in investors that have experience in hospitality. And I brought in actually the studio, because there's nothing better than a movie company showing up and filming for about a month and paying you a bunch of money and then leaving. It's about the greatest deal going. So we got the ranch bought.
Now what?
And I had a conversation with Joe Leathers where he said, what's your vision for this ranch? And I explained it. I said, we can improve the horse. It's a very storied place with fantastic ranch horses, but we can improve that. We can really pursue some of these big stallions, and we can improve that, and we can improve the general herd of ranch horses throughout that region. We bred 1,800 mares last year, and so that's having a tremendous impact upon ranching and on the quarter horse. And then I said, I want to take this whole herd straight to the plate. I want to go direct to consumer and direct to food service. And that is something that Joe Leathers and Miss Marion have been trying to work out for 20 years. And as she got ill, she wasn't able to pursue that anymore. And so his vision for the ranch aligned perfectly with mine, which is how I was fortunately able to keep the leadership in place, which I needed. And keep the ranch intact with the same employees as it's had for so long. So that's a long-winded answer of how I became. And I'll tell you what, there was a period, because it was a foot race to close this deal with Paramount and then finance the ranch. And I'll tell you what, I was really rich for about 45 minutes. It happened on the same day. And so I closed one deal and I became a pass-through corporation and funded the ranch, and now I'm broke again.
It's Agriculture Today.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, South Dakota Representative Dusty Johnson.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Brad Rippey's a meteorologist with USDA.
Back in 2022, the surface elevation of Lake Mead dropped below 1,041 feet above sea level. That is more than 180 feet below what is considered a full lake. And as a result, the famous bathtub ring of mineral deposits on the side of the lake have become synonymous with the drought in the southwestern United States. Now, since that time, in the mid to late part of 2022, when we hit those all-time record lows, we have seen some modest recovery. Now, a lot of that recovery is actually due to the extremely wet winter that we experienced last winter in 2022-23 across not just the southwest, but really the entire western United States. That alone has boosted the lake's level by more than 20 feet. So that we're looking at the lake level, we see that that level has increased to nearly 1,064 feet above sea level. So immediately there, you can see that we've gained more than 20 feet on the lake elevation, just primarily due to the wet winter.